the non-deterministic version and the complement of the non-deterministic version. You already have this diagram written out, probably. We have something like this. These inclusions here hold because if we are on deterministic machines, we a machine running with certain bound on space using exponentially more time, like here and here, about the co-versions of deterministic classes, because if we can decide a problem and give the answer yes, we can also give the answer no, so both classes are equal. P and co-P mean the same. And the goal of this lecture is to show that some of these containments can add more containments between these classes, in particular non-deterministic classes corresponding to non-deterministic Turing machines with bounds on space. We will add by the end inclusions here, and the tools we will need for this are some of the results from Wednesday. Namely, that the reachability problem on graphs is in polynomial time. This is something, as I mentioned, you already know from your courses on data structures and graph algorithms. And we will also use the improved version on space of this result that says that reachability on a graph can be solved in space square of a logarithmic for some constant. So this says that for this, the standard algorithm needs a linear space, but we saw that there's a way to solve this problem with the square of a logarithmic in space. It's less efficient in time, but needs less resources. This will be the tools we will use. And what we need to do, essentially, to add these show containments here is a way for showing that given a problem that is in one class, let's say a problem in NL, can be solved also in P, for instance. And the way we will do that is taking a Turing machine that solves the problem with this restriction in space and running it somehow in polynomial time. And we will like to use graph reachability somehow to do this. The other tool we will need is the idea of a configuration of a Turing machine, which is something quite straightforward. It's just a description of the current state of the Turing machine, the total state. Think of a real computer running a program. The state of the machine will be the content of all the memory, the content of the registers, the value of the instruction pointer, and that's more or less it. If you know that, if you have that snapshot of the machine, you know precisely what would be the next instruction, etc. That's, in fact, if you configure your Linux appropriately, when you get a segmentation fault, this snapshot of the content is dumped to your disk. It's called a core dump. It has all the content of your memory, registers, etc. And the equivalent of the core dump of a Turing machine, it's called a configuration. What we need to have in this case is what is the state, the current state of the Turing machine, where the heads are positioned on each tape, what's the content of the tapes. If we know all that, we know the exact state of the machine. So now one little observation is that in principle, for a given Turing machine, there could be infinitely many configurations, infinitely many snapshots in which it could be. Why infinitely many? Well, because in each tape we could have strings of arbitrary length. The machine could have written arbitrary, unbounded amount of things on the work tapes. But we are working, we're interested on Turing machines that run with some bound on the usage of the of the working tapes. So we can exploit that and refer to configurations which are somehow bounded in space. The working tapes are not larger than something, and that will give us a finite set of relevant configurations for a given Turing machine and a given input. So let's define this properly. So we define the notion of a configuration where the strings in the working tapes is bounded in size. That's the idea. So assume that we have a given Turing machine M, and let's assume that the states are numbered. Have state 1, 2, 3, state M for a large enough M. And let's say it has k working tapes. Remember that we are assuming that the input tape is not writable. And since we are working on decision problems, we don't have a write tape. They are all working tapes. There's no write-only tape. So so for this situation, and also assume we have a function f, which intuitively is the bound on the space usage for this Turing machine. Assume this is given to us. Then an f-bounded configuration is a tuple an f-bounded configuration for an input of length n. Assume that the machine is given an input of length n, and we need this because this will give us an idea of how far away the head reading the input can go, is a tuple S pos 0, pos 1, pos k, t 1, t k. It's a large tuple subject to certain restrictions. So what is this? S is a number between 1 and m. So S is giving us in which state the machine is currently in. Pos 0 is the position of the reading head. the head reading the input. Since the input has length n, we can assume that this value is at most n. We can assume that the head never moves past the end of the input. Then each of the posts 1, 2, 3, 4, k are the head of the working tapes, working tape 1, 2, 3, k. And we know that f bounds how much can be written in those heads. So we can also assume that these heads are bounded by f of n. We are never going farther apart from where we actually write. And finally, these are the contents of all of the working tapes. And the contents are strings containing zeros, ones, and spaces. And we know how long these strings can be. They are at most f of n, because that's our bound on space usage. So each TI is a string over the language 0, 1, space of length f of n. And this gives us the complete description of a machine. Under this assumption, of course, the number of configurations is finite. There are only finitely many, because strings, the working tapes are finite strings, etc. So how many configurations precisely are given the machine, the input length, and the bound? Well, we can do the accounting. So the number of f bounded configurations for an input size n. So how many are they? Well, we can have m different states, the values for the first component of the tuple. For the second component of the tuple, we have n possible values, n plus 1 possible values, actually. For each of the k heads, we can have, again, f of n plus 1 possible values. And then how many possible tapes we have? So for each working tape, we can have how many strings can we build of length f of n with an alphabet of three elements? Well, this is 3 to the f of n, maybe plus 1. And this gives us all the possible configurations we can have. And this number is in the order of a to the f of n for some constant a. So the important thing is that they are exponentially many on f of n configurations for some a. Fixing the Turing machine f and n, there are exponentially many configurations on f of n being the exponent. And also, How large, how much space do we need to store one configuration? Well, it's clear that what dominates the size of the configuration is the size of the strings for the tapes. That's k times something of length f of n. So the size of a configuration is in O of f of n. What dominates is the size of the length of the strings describing the contents of the working tapes. Now, okay, we know how to describe the execution context of a Turing machine. Now there's a little observation. Let's say we start, every time we start a machine, we know in which configuration we are. The initial configuration of a machine is uniquely determined. It's a configuration where the state is the initial state. All the heads are in the position zero, and the content of the working tapes is all blanks. Okay, so the initial configuration of any Turing machine, I will call it C0, is uniquely determined and it's the state 0, all heads in position 0, and all the tapes containing blanks. Now, let's say we are given. A concrete input, okay, of length n. We are given a concrete input. We know that we have a finite set of possible configurations for that machine. What we can build is what it's called a configuration graph. What is this? It's a graph where the edges of the graph, the nodes, are configurations, and we put an arrow between one configuration and another if in the current configuration. So the idea is in a configuration graph, we have a state configurations, possible configurations, and we put an arrow here if and only if, being the machine in this state, in this configuration, it is possible that the next, immediately next configuration is this one. Okay, it's giving us the possible execution flow of the machine. For a deterministic machine, this graph will be a disjoint union, if you want, of things where from each configuration there's only one arrow going out. That's the idea of the machine being deterministic. If the machine is non-deterministic, then in a given configuration there might be more than one possibility. We can reach this configuration or this one. We have non-deterministic choice to do that. So in the end, for a fixed input, we can build this configuration graph. So and notice that we need to have the input to build the graph, because in this tuple that makes our configuration, we are not including the input tape. We only have the working tapes, the position of the input head, but we didn't include the input head in itself. So we need to have it in order to build this graph. We need to know what's the character at position, what's the character read it by the head zero. So so for a fixed input x of length one can build a configuration graph where the nodes are configurations, or F-bounded configurations. And we put an arrow from configuration I to configuration j if with input x the machine can move from CI to CJ. So OK, we have this notion of configuration graph describing the possible execution path of a machine given a concrete input. And we know that there is one node here, which is the initial configuration, OK, for that input. And we want to know if this concrete machine accepts this input, accepts input x. So essentially, deciding if the machine will accept the input amounts to finding a path on this graph to some state whose state is accept something. OK, it's a reachability problem, finding a path from here to some state, some configuration whose state is accept. Now the problem is that in principle we could have many different configurations with state accept. State accept, but heads are in different positions. We could have that this one here is also in state accept, but heads and the content of the strings are different. So as it is, we would need to find a path from this node to one of many possible destinations. And this is inconvenient for us because the problem we've been discussing so far, that graph reachability, is the problem of going from one point to another point. And here we need to solve the problem of going from one point to a set of finite points, any of those. So we would like to have a simplifying assumption that tells us that deciding if a Turing machine accepts an input amounts to finding a path between the initial configuration and a unique final configuration. That would be much better, because if the problem reduces to that, we can use path on a configuration graph. And Intuitively, that is an assumption we can make, because imagine that you have a Turing machine that accepts certain type of input, but at the end, heads and contents of the working tapes can be whatever. Well, you can modify your Turing machine so that by the moment it would reach the state accept, it first does some cleanup. It goes through all the working tapes and fills them with blanks, and then move all the heads to the initial position. And in that Turing machine, then there's a unique configuration where it will end. It will end once it's sure that the input is okay and it has cleaned up all the mess it did in computing it, and we can try to find a path to that final point. And the observation is that we don't lose much in terms of complexity if we do this cleanup. So let's formalize this claim. So let's say we have a little lemma or an observation, whatever, that says that for every Turing machine of this kind, without a writing tape, there exists another modified Turing machine M prime, such that they are equivalent. They accept the same input. But M prime cleans up at the end. That means that M prime only reaches an accepting state or the accepting state when heads are in position zero. All heads are in position zero, and working tapes contain only blanks. So this is okay, sounds reasonable, we can do it, we take M and modify it so that it does that. But the important claim is that the overhead, so for M prime it will take more time and more space to do things, because in the end it needs to clean up everything. But the overhead of M prime in time and space is a constant factor. So we can multiply by some constant, and we get to bound the difference. This M prime, we call it normalized. And how can we be sure? So the fact that for every Turing machine M, there's an M prime which cleans up at the end is easy to believe. How do we ensure that the overhead in space and time is a constant? Well, we can just fix a method in which we do the cleanup in the end. So what we can do, one possibility to do it is this. We modify M so that it always marks the end of a working tape, the last position, by some code we use in bits. Every time it will move to the right of this mark, it moves the mark as well. So that the working tapes are always delimited by a unique mark that says this is the end of the tape. And in the end, when we are almost done, we move all heads to the right until we find the mark on all, and then go back to the left, cleaning afterwards. And we only need a constant factor for space, because we need to add this encoding of the end of each tape, which maybe needs us to use an encoding for zeros and ones before, or something like that. And this will give us a constant factor each time we do any operation. Instead of moving left one position, maybe we need to move two positions, three positions, depending on the size of our mark. And in the end, we need to scan all working tapes from left to right. That will also be a linear factor on the space usage we had. So the idea is we modify M prime so that, we modify M so that it marks with some code the end, the right end of each working tape. And at the end, we scan the end mark, if you want, on each tape. And clean from there. It's a small technicality, so that we can assume that our Turing machines clean up at the end. And now, with a normalized Turing machine in this sense, we can assume that the problem of deciding if a Turing machine accepts an input is equivalent to the problem of finding a path between two points, the initial configuration and the unique final configuration on a configuration graph. And we know something about the complexity of finding a path in a graph. Now, if we are willing, if our plan is to use the algorithm for searching path in a graph on configuration graphs, that means that we will need to be able to somehow generate these configuration graphs. That's the whole point, having programs that generate the configuration graphs for another programs. And the idea is that while generating them is not difficult. It's just if we want to generate them all, iterate them all, generate the list of all F-bounded configurations for a concrete input size, can be done by nesting many loops, and we don't need much space. The only space we need is proportional to the size of a configuration, and that is something we will use. So let's write this. So the idea is we want to enumerate the set of all configurations, like having an iterator or something like that. So let's look at the problem of listing all configurations, how much space we need for that. And so the f-bounded configurations for an input of size n can be listed. So we want to produce a list of all configurations in our write tape, say. Using workspace, which is in O of F of n, where remember that O of F of n is the size of each individual configuration. So this intuitively says we only need to keep one configuration at whole at every moment. Whenever, so we need a little assumption. F of x is greater than of log of x for all x. Otherwise, the bound is different. It's the maximum between f of n and log of x, log of n. But since we are interested in classes starting with logarithmic space upwards, this restriction for us is meaningless. So what's the idea? Well, we need to show how to list them all. What's the program that lists them all? And look at the space usage. So so we see the case for k equals 1, only one working tape. For more working tapes, as you will see, it's exactly the same. So how we list them all? Well, it's we need nested loops to consider all possibilities. So we need to iterate . So assume that we have f of n in variable z. It's just a simple assumption. We already computed f of n, and it's in variable z. So we just do this. We iterate over all possible states. And we iterate over all possible values for the input head, which are values from 0 to n. Now we iterate over all possible values for the only working head we have, for head 1. And this goes from 0 to z, because we assume that z contains f of n already. And now we need to iterate over all possible strings. So for each t1 in 0, 1, blank to the seat. We are listing them, so we just write the tuple s pos 0 pos 1 t1, and that's it. This program lists, writes all the possible configurations. And what's the space usage of this program? Let's see. So we have, for S, we need log m bits. And this is a constant, because m is fixed. The Turing machine is fixed. So this is a constant, 32, whatever. For post zero, we need, logarithm of n bits. For post one, we need a logarithm of f of n. And for T1, we need, something which is as long as f of n. We have f of n symbols. So this is O of f of n bits. I'm saying O because that would be multiplied by the logarithm of 3 or something like that. So it's O of f of n bits. Plus this is to store T1, but we need to count how much space we need to generate each of the strings. But to generate each of the strings, we just need a variable to iterate from 1 to Z. So we need to iterate this many times, Z times, and for each of them, just output 0 or 1. So this gives us these factories to generate each string. So overall, we have that since f of n is assumed to be greater than or equal to log of n, what dominates is this factor here. Using that f of n is greater than log of n. Okay, so this program is generating the list of all configurations one after another like crazy. It's not hard to imagine that we modify it to have an iterator in the sense of Java iterators, or something that says, give me another configuration if there are still some configuration coming and you get it. Are there more? Yes, so give me the next. We can iterate configurations in that sense, and the space that the iterator object, if you want, will need to take will be again O of f of n. It needs to keep these variables as fields, etc. So in an object-oriented version of a Turing machine, we have an iterator in this sense, and the analysis is the same. So in the end, in a few minutes, we will write some programs where we will iterate over configurations and assume that this takes only a space proportional to f of n. So now there will be one more technical definition. This will not be very crucial. It has an ugly looking name, but don't care much about it. So last week or the week before, when first introducing Turing machines, you saw a notion of time-constructible function. And you also had to do some exercise in the tutorials regarding time constructability. And there's an analog notion for space. Essentially, we can compute f of given n in unary, we can compute f of n in binary using a space proportional to f of n. So let's write this. F of n is space constructible if there is a Turing machine M. So this sounds scary, but I will show you in a moment why it's really not such that. M, the Turing machine, if it's given an input of length n, the Turing machine with an input of length n computes f of n in binary and requires space proportional to f of n, linear in f of n. Now, observation, all interesting functions, all natural functions, mathematical functions are space constructible. And why? Well, because what this says is that we want to compute something f of n, a number, and this number takes log of f of n bits, okay? Because that's the number of bits needed to write this number. To write it, we need log of f of n bits, and we are given f of n space. So this is exponential space on the size of the output. That's a lot of space. All functions we will use, and we can hear, and logarithms, linear, polynomial, exponential, whatever, are computable within log of f of n space. So this is typically okay. This is not just a technicality. Of course, one can find examples of functions which are not space constructible, but they are rather artificial. So we arrive at, after all this detour introducing concepts, we can finally show our first results. Now, what we want to do is, we already know that we can trade in a Turing machine, in a deterministic Turing machine, we can trade space for exponentially more time. That's what we have written there in the horizontal axis, if you want. With exponential more time, we can compute problems that are computable with certain amount of space. What we want to do is extend that to the case of programs that can be computed by a non-deterministic machine using a space bound. And we can show that they can also be simulated by a deterministic machine with exponentially more time. So formally, this says that the problems that can be solved by a non-deterministic Turing machine using space bounded by a function f can be solved also by a deterministic Turing machine but in time c to the f. So let's write this f of n and c to the f of n. Okay, non-deterministic Turing machines with a space on with a bound on space can be simulated by deterministic Turing machines that take exponentially more time. So this is for some suitable constant and assuming that F is space constructible. And that f of x is greater than log of x. Our plan, what's going to be, it's we want to, given a Turing machine that lives in this in this class, a Turing machine that solves a problem in this class with this particular restriction, we want to build the configuration graph for it, which will be large, which will be exponential on this, and then we want to do a path search on it and use the fact that reachability in a graph can be solved in polynomial time. And we will have a polynomial of something exponentially large, and that will be exponential as well, and everything will be okay. The only thing is that to do that, we need to assume that our machine is normalized in that sense. So by the lemma we used before, if M runs in space f of n, we can assume a normalized equivalent m prime running in A times F of n space. Okay, it's just we modify it as before. And if F is space constructible, A times F of n, it's also space constructible. And we don't need to care about that. So this is for a fixed A. Now we need to write a program that accepts the same input as m prime, and then the same input as m. And we want this program to be deterministic, okay? And we aim for it to run in exponential time on f of n. So the following program accepts the same input as m prime and, of course, of m. So what's the idea of this program? As I said, it's first generate the configuration graph as a adjacency matrix, if you want. And then just run path on it. So let's call this program sim for simulate n prime, and it takes an input of length n. So the first thing we do is compute f of n. And this can be done in space, in deterministic space. By assumption, because F is space constructible. And if it can be done in space linear in F of n, because the assumption that space, deterministic space, can be traced for exponential time, we know that this can be done in time O of, I don't know, H1 to F of n for some constant H1. Okay, this is we are using the same principle we used to conclude that P is included in L is included in P, P space in exp, etc. We try deterministic space for exponential more deterministic time. So now we build the configuration graph. As an adjacency matrix, the adjacency matrix, I call it M, and we will represent it as a string of bits, very long string of bits. So initially it's empty, and we need to fill it with all the values. And how we do this? Well, we can iterate, as I said, over all configurations using a suitable modification of that code. So for each F bounded configuration CI, and notice that this takes space, which is O of F of n, okay, because that's what the lemma says. Iterating over each takes for each one this space, and this implies time, which is exponential on F of n for some other constant, H2. Okay, if we use linear space, we need at most exponential time. And this gives us the rows, say. Now we need the columns for each F-bounded configuration CJ. And again, by the same analysis, we get time H3 of, or H2, if you want, the same time of F of n. Now we have two configurations. We need to check if we need to put a 1 or a 0 in the matrix. Can we reach being in this configuration with this input? Would machine M prime be able to non-deterministically jump to this configuration? So that can be easily implemented. So if from CI, we could move to CJ in the machine M prime with input B0, Bn. We check that. We need to look at the description of M prime, which is fixed. Then we append a 1 to m. That means that in this position of the matrix, there's a 1, because there's a transition from ci to cj. And otherwise, we append a 0. We cannot reach from this configuration with this input cj from ci in one step. And that's it. Okay, and what's the cost of checking this? So what kind of things we need to do this? Well, for instance, we will need to compare the working tapes, the value of the working tapes in both configurations to be if they differ in what they need to differ. And for that, we will need to scan them completely. And these are things of size proportional to f of n. Okay, so the cost of these checks will be proportional to f of n, linear in f of n. We'll also need to scan the input to see what's the content of head 0, in what would be the context of the content of head 0 in machine m prime. But this scanning will take time linear in the size of the input. So in the end, this is the time that this test takes is linear on n plus f of n. And that means that this is greater than this, because f of n is greater than log of n. So this is a simple test, doesn't take much. So that means that at this point, the total so far is time exponential in f of n for some h3. So far we've used exponential time, okay? And and also I will do a little simplification just to make this code simpler, but notice that in these two iterations we could also have a search the index of C0 and CF in the matrix. Okay, here this matrix has only has the states numbered 1, 2, 3, 4, the configurations number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, etc. One of that must correspond to C0 in the numeration. C0 in the numeration is state 72. And CF, the final state, the final configuration, will be some other node in the numeration. So we need to find which of those are, but we can do it in this loop, and it won't increase the running time. It will be still exponential. The only thing we need to do is here compare I with CI to C0, and if it's that, store what's the number of this state in the matrix. So the index of C0 and CF can be easily found modifying the loop. With no impact in time.
So I assume that, I will assume that we already have it. So
so at that point, the only thing we need to do is test whether M in M in the configuration graph from C0 we can reach to CF in which is written as is this tuple in path? Is it true that from C0 in this matrix we can reach to CF? If you allow me a little change just to make this more readable in the future when you look again at your notes, I will change the name of the matrix to G, because M was also the name of our Turing machine, and I don't want everybody to get confused in the end. So this is the configuration graph, the adjacency matrix of the configuration graph for M prime, and we want to know if C0 is reachable from CF. Now, path is in P time. We know that so far everything is okay. We've been taking only exponential time of f of n. So how hard will be to solve this? Well, this is in P. We can solve it in polynomial time. Okay? And the question is, this is polynomial on the size of the matrix. Okay? So the question is, how large is this matrix? So since path is in P, this last step takes time proportional to the size of the matrix to the k for some k. Okay, that's what being in P means. Now the question is how large is this matrix? So this is number of configurations squared all to the k, because the matrix has in rows and configurations, all the in rows and columns, all the configurations, and we know because we calculated at the very beginning that the possible number of configurations is exponential in f of n. It's over there on the leftmost blackboard. So this is exponential on f of n. So this is O of A to the f of n to the 2k, and this is O of h for h of n for some suitable constant. We just put everything again here and then multiply the base, and we get that in the end this is exponential as well. So we had exponential many steps, exponential on f of n many steps to compute the matrix, and then exponential many steps to solve reachability on the matrix. A lot of time, but within what we wanted to achieve initially. So overall, it's exponential. Good. What this gives us? Mm,
Let's wipe somewhere. So, what can we conclude from that result? We have the following. NL is included in P. Co-NL also NP space is included in exp. And etc. So a co NP space is included in exp as well. And if we look at the class of problems solved by a non-deterministic Turing machine in exponential space, that will be included in the class of problems solved by a deterministic Turing machine in double exponential time, etc. This is not hard to see. The idea is that assume we have something. So for one, look that we have that we can solve something, let's say, in K times K times log n space. Okay, we have a problem that is here. That means that we can solve it in K times log n space by a non-deterministic Turing machine. So by the theorem, a deterministic Turing machine solves it in time c to the k log n. That is what the result says. We need exponential more time. But what is c to the k log n? This is 2 to the log of c. This is just c to the k times log n. But this is 2 to the log c times k times log n. But 2 to the log n is n. So this is n to the k times log c. Okay, and this is in p. So this is a constant, is the point. So this gives us the first part.
For the second part,
we use that NL is in P, okay? But P is closed by complementation, okay? So the complement of NL, it's also in P, because all problems in NL are in P. The complement of all problems in P are also in P. So the complement of problems in NL are also in P. So this follows from 1 plus P equals copy. And we are done. The third equivalence is the same idea, even simpler. So what this gives us in terms of So in terms of our knowledge, we can somehow change this picture we have as follows. So we can now put CoNL here and NL here and say that we have inclusions in this way, just like before. But now they also go this way. So what we knew before is just a particular case of this chain of inclusions. And here it's the same. We can remove them from here, remove this one, which is superfluous, and now write co np space and np space. So we've improved a little our knowledge. We had some disconnected stuff. Now they are more connected. And we can actually do a little more. So in this case, we've shown how to trade non-deterministic space in a non-deterministic Turing machine by time in a deterministic Turing machine. Now let's look at how we can trade space in a non-deterministic Turing machine by space in a deterministic Turing machine. And the idea is that we want to have the tightest result as possible. We want to use as little space as possible. So there are two things we need to do. First, instead of using the simple algorithm for testing reachability in polynomial time with polynomial space, let's use the second result, the one that tells us you can take a little more time but use much less space, the square of a logarithmic. So we will use that algorithm, the one from the second theorem. And now there's one more thing. If we generate the full matrix like we did here, at this point we generated the matrix, this will take a lot of space. Okay, so what we need to do is try to avoid generating the matrix. How can we avoid generating the matrix? Well, one can do tricks like, for instance, in the real world, maybe you need to have some matrix type in your Java program or whatever, but you know it's a sparse matrix. So instead of using a large array, you only keep a small array for the elements that are in the matrix really. And then you provide an abstract interface. You have some method that says, give me the value in column I, row j,
and you will do some calculations. You will check if that combination is in your list of one values or not, and return one or zero. You don't have the real matrix stored anywhere. You just have an interface that simulates the results of the matrix. That's something you can do, and we can try to do that as well. Instead of computing the matrix and keeping it in memory, we provide an interface for querying whether there's a one in one position of the matrix. When they give us a row and a column, what we need to do is execute this thing from scratch until we generate the relevant configuration for that row and column, do the test, and return yes or no. And the only space we will be using is the space for holding the variables. It will be very inefficient, or much more inefficient, because we will be generating all this stuff all the time, but we are saving space, which is our goal. And the only thing we need to do is do some refactoring. So let's write this. This says that n space of f, f of n, can be traded. We can get rid of non-determinism using space, which is the square of f. Now we don't have an exponential, only an square. Again, with our usual assumptions, if f is space constructible and f of x is greater than log of x. Now, what's the proof? I will just sketch what's the refactorings we need to do. So we know that there's a Turing machine that can solve the problem of path reachability in that space, assuming that the matrix is given in the input tape, okay? But now let's refactor that program so that every time it would read in the input tape whether there's a zero or one at a row-column combination, instead of doing that, it calls a function that asks the representation of the matrix where there's a one or a zero there. The algorithm should be the same. It's the same idea. We just replace reading from the input for calling a function. So we know that there is a Turing machine running in space. This is a capital space. Small caps means a class of Turing machines with certain bound in the space usage. In this case, it's C times log n squared because of that theorem that solves the problem path. And as I said, the idea is that we refactor this program we refactor M such that every time it would need to read the matrix in the input, it calls a function.
query the matrix. Calls a function get ij. Tell me if there's a 1 or a 0 in position ij of the matrix. That's simple refactoring. Eclipse does it for you with the proper plugin. It's not a problem. So now we need to see how to implement this function. Okay, and implementing this function is just running those nested loops until we find the proper what are the configurations numbered I and j, and doing the test and returning one or zero. So get ij is implemented iterating twice over all configurations. As was done before. We just copy and paste that code and change it a little so that we, instead of writing every time, we wait until we are in position ij and then output a 1 or a 0. And that's it. Now we need to look So clearly, what we get is correct in the sense of it solves the same problem we wanted to solve, whether whether a given Turing machine will accept some input, etc. But what's the space analysis? What's the space usage? So we have a variation of that algorithm, but with another space usage. So what is this? So we know that this uses the same space M, the original Turing machine to solving path, would have used if given the complexity graph, the configuration graph, plus the space get ij requires. This is the total space needed. And so this is O of a logarithm of the size of the configuration graph squared. Okay, that's the complexity of the problem for reachability we are using, plus O of f of n. This is the space of get ij. And now, what's the size of g? Well, this was an exponential on f of n. So this is O of log c to the f of n squared, but this is just We have the logarithm of an exponential. This gives us f of n, this part here, squared. And this is, of course, what's dominating the space usage. And that's what we wanted to achieve. And what this gives us as a corollary, and with this we are done, P space equals NP space. And of course, co-NP space as well. Why? Well, because if we need polynomial space, non-deterministic polynomial space to solve it, and then we need the square of a polynomial space in a deterministic machine, the square of a polynomial is a polynomial. So this is again in P space. And so with that, we simplify this picture here by simply removing these parts here and the one above. And this is our knowledge at this point. It could be that they are all the same, or that there's at least one that is different. What you will see in next weeks is that at least one of these is different, so this cannot all just collapse. Questions? Okay, then have a good weekend.